Hey, Roscoe, I'm home.
Hey, boy. How you doing? Oh, uh-oh. Why does it smell stinky in the house? Why? Oh, no, Roscoe. You know, you don't do this in the house. You know that. It's all over the place. Oh.
Everything, everywhere, all at once.
Bad dog.
Will not be presented at this time.
Julia, do we have any more paper towels?
So that we may present this episode of Peculiar Podcast.
My God, Roscoe, what have you been eating?
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News.
It's time for Peculiar Podcast, hosted by Pat Cashman.
Gorgeous to look at.
And Lisa Foster.
She's dangerous.
See, you're on.
Ready or not, it's Pat and Lisa.
Yeehaw! Can you dig it?
Yeah, I can dig it, yeah.
It's love and time.
Okay, here we go again, and relatively soon after our previous podcast, which is a refreshing change. Wouldn't you agree, Miss Foster?
I think so. This doesn't happen often, so yeah. You better appreciate it.
All right, let's run like the wind through this thing. Okay, as you know, I'm going to try to make this really brief, okay? But there are a few people that checked out of the Hotel Earth during the last time that we did this podcast. You remember, ever heard of the actress Mary Beth Hurt?
Yes, she yeah. wasn't she in like Poltergeist or something? Or no?
Her most famous movies were Interiors, a Woody Allen movie.
He's a grown man. He makes his own decisions.
Yes, but he puts great store by what you have to say.
If he wants to move back in with you, he will. If he doesn't, he won't.
Why are you so reluctant to help me?
Reluctant? I do nothing but cater to you.
And then she played Garp's wife in The World According to Garp. She played Robin Williams' wife.
Garp?
Yes, Garp.
Sounds like a fish.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now.
My name is T.S. Garp.
What's T.S. stand for?
Terribly sexy. I used to be terribly shy, but I changed.
If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door?
Oh, I don't think so.
Got it.
She mostly did theater, but she popped up in a lot of things. Married for a time to William Hurt, the actor. That's where her last name came from.
Right.
He checked out a few years ago. Mary Beth Hurt, 79. To like this group quite a lot, if you can call two guys a group, Seals and Croft.
See the curtains hanging in the window in the evening on a Friday night.
Jim Seals, half of the group, passed away 3 or 4 years ago, and now Dash Crofts is gone as well. He was 87 years old. They had a lot of hits. Summer Breeze
makes me feel fine.
Diamond Girl.
Sugar shine.
Hummingbird. We may never pass this way again.
Now, that song, we may never pass this way again.
Life, so they say. But a game, and they let it slip away.
Yearbooks used to have, like, senior classes. I don't know if that's a thing anymore, but they used to have their song for whatever their graduating class was, and that's what we had in our yearbook.
Like the twilight in the road up ahead.
Yeah, and ours in my high school class was Oh, Susanna. It had just been released.
Really? Are you kidding?
That's
me?
How old I am. Yeah.
I came from Alabama with a banjo on my knee. I'm going to Louisiana, my true love for to see, with a banjo on my knee.
No, ours was The Impossible Dream. Talk about a hokey song.
No kidding.
That was it.
Jim Nabors.
The unreachable.
Bring it home, Gomer. Yeah, baby.
The other thing I want to mention about Dash Cross and Jim Seals is that they were both in the Baha'i faith. And so there's kind of religious themes in a lot of their music. You'll like this. When they were younger, they met up for the first time, and they were part of a group called The Champs. The Champs had a big hit in 1958, and this is it.
Tequila.
That's a great song.
Yeah,
that's a great song. I could use me some tequila right about now.
Yeah, and great lyrics, too.
Yeah.
A guy named Chip Taylor checked out. He was 86. He wrote a buttload of songs. Angel of the Morning was a hit for Merrilee Rush, who lives right here in the Northwest.
Just call me Angel of the Morning, Angel.
This guy, Chip Taylor, was inducted into Songwriters Hall of Fame in 2016, and among all the other songs that he wrote, this one was probably the one that will be best remembered.
Wild Thing. You make my heart sing.
Wild Thing. The Troggs.
Wild Thing, I think I love you. But I wanna know for sure. Come on, hold me tight. I love you.
He performed Wild Thing when he got inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. During the ceremony, he performed it with his grandkids. Chip Taylor, also the brother of the actor John Voight. Chip Taylor. Then.
And John Voight, if you want to continue that on, is the father of Angelina Jolie.
Yes. Who is the niece of George Washington, who is the father of our country. It's very complicated.
Yeah. Who's my cousin by another mother.
Then a guy named Augie Myers has departed, 85 years old. He played the Vox organ. It might be everybody else in rock and roll or country music, too, liked to play the big Hammond B3. It was a big, deep organ. But this Vox thing was kind of a more of a reedy sound. And Augie Myers defined the sound of Tex-Mex music for a lot of other groups. Sir Douglas Quintet. And this was their hit, She's About a Mover.
She's about a mover. Well, you know I love you, baby. Whoa, yeah, what I say.
I always thought they might have borrowed a bit of that from Ray Charles.
Mama, won't you treat me wrong? Come and love you, daddy, all night long, all night long. Hey, hey.
Or maybe it was the other way around.
What I say.
And then, Hey, Baby, Que Paso by the Texas Tornadoes.
Hey, baby, que paso? No que yo era vato. Hey, baby, que paso?
Augie Myers, he belongs to the ages.
No me dejes de ese modo. Hey, baby, que paso?
And one final one, Lise. Larry Reed, I'm sure that name rings a bell for you, and you know, already know, I should say, what he was the master of.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, 81 years old, the master of?
The, you tell him, Pat, I can't pronounce it right. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah, it's hard to pronounce, shadow puppetry.
Right. I've always had difficulty saying that.
That's what he did. And I learned
that's
a lot
awesome.
From him. You can get on YouTube and learn. Look at this one. I'm doing this one for you. Does that or does that not look?
Deep and much.
shadow. Exactly like Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah.
Can you see it?
That I do now.
Yeah, yeah. I got that from Larry Reed, master of shadow puppetry. All alone and feeling blue. And there it is. And speaking of Donald Trump, Lisa Foster, we don't trade in politics on this podcast. People get enough of that elsewhere. But can I just do one little screed?
Would you please?
And forgive us, folks. If you are a great supporter of our current president, I do respect you, but I just don't share that point of view with you. That Mike Johnson should be a preferred rider on the next bus to hell. Because he seems to have no idea of what the legislative branch is supposed to be. And it's not to slavishly serve the president, any president. Mike Johnson might as well bring a shoeshine kit to the White House.
Oh, Pat!
Because his supplication is an utter embarrassment. And the other thing I wanted to note, Lisa, is how come the mainstream press doesn't make note of Trump's staggering mental decline? The guy is down to about an 8-word vocabulary now, and he can't focus on anything unless he's lining up a putt. And I only say this is because the press really gave it to Biden regarding his enfeeblement. So why does a more even more an incoherent guy like Trump get a pass?
Because the mainstream press is run by media companies that favor this propaganda. That's why. They're told what to say. They're told what not to say. But a lot of people don't realize that. The mainstream media network is no longer, we don't have free press anymore. It's done. It's gone. And you've got people, very deep pockets, that are telling, I'm so glad that, I don't know about you, but I am so glad I'm no longer in the media. It would go against every single thing that I believe in. And I'm just glad I'm not part of that anymore. It's astonishing that there's no accountability, no guardrails, none of this. I mean, look at the guy who's heading up the FCC, for crying out loud.
We're not even supposed to know who the FCC chairman is. I mean, it should be an invisible job.
Right.
And that is not directly involved in anything political. It's supposed to be a neutral position. And it's anything but.
Yeah.
I did this, and I know I'm not the first person to have thought of this. I can guarantee it. But I somehow started thinking about this old Twilight Zone episode. And even if you're a younger person, I bet a lot of younger people have seen all of the Twilight Zone episodes. It just endures. Well, there was one episode that I thought, this pretty much explains what's going on in much of Washington right now, as far as the relationship and the fearfulness of Donald Trump by other people. It was an episode called It's a Good Life. But there was a childhood actor who later played Will Robinson on the original Lost in Space. Ooh, little boy. Well, with the one with Dr. Smith. Well, Billy Mummy was the kid. And in this episode, well, here's the beginning of it that Rod Serling says. He said, this calls for a different kind of introduction. I don't do a great Rod Serling, but he says, on a given morning not long ago, the rest of the world disappeared, and the little town of Peeksville was left all alone. Its inhabitants were never sure whether the world was destroyed and only Peekville left untouched, or whether the village had somehow been taken away. They were, on the other hand, sure of one thing, the cause. A monster had arrived in the village, and just by using his mind, he took away the automobiles, the electricity, the machines, because they displeased him. And he moved an entire community back into the Dark Ages just by using his mind. And then it's revealed that this so-called monster is a little 5-6-year-old kid. Little cute boy face, blue eyes, sweet. And so what happens in this episode is you become increasingly aware that this kid has some kind of a power where if you piss him off, something bad's going to happen.
Man, I'd kill for that. I would kill for that kind of a superpower.
Oh, my God. If you could just have it for 10 minutes.
Just 10 minutes.
Wouldn't that be great?
I'd get so much done in that 10 minutes.
So all these adults, they're terrified of this kid because they know that something bad's going to happen. So they flatter him. That's good what you did. That's real good. Here's an excerpt.
Don't play that, Pat.
I forgot to mention that I'm in this episode briefly.
That's not what I want you to play. Play this. Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday.
And all the other adults are recoiling in horror because they know he's going to piss the kid off.
Stop!
And now the little kid, his name is Anthony, is really torqued off. His eyes are bulging. And the guy who was singing Happy Birthday turns to the parents of the kid. His name is Anthony.
You and her, you had him. You had to go have him.
And then the guy turns towards...
Monster, you.
Anthony.
You dirty little monster.
Anthony's about to explode.
You murderer. Go ahead, Anthony. You think bad thoughts about me. And maybe some man in this room, some man with guts, somebody who's so sick to death of living in this kind of place and willing to take a chance, will sneak up behind you and lay something heavy across your skull and end this once and for all.
You're a bad man. You're a very bad man.
Somebody sneak up behind him. Somebody end this now. Somebody take a lamp or a bottle or something and end this.
You're a bad man. You're a very bad man. And you keep thinking bad thoughts about me.
Anthony raises his finger, points to the guy, and turns him into a human jack-in-the-box. You can see his head bobbing.
Wish it into the cornfield. Please, son, wish it into the cornfield, please.
Wishing somebody out into the cornfield is sort of a euphemism for rubbing them out.
He was a bad man, so I turned him into a jack-in-the-box. A jack-in-the-box that still had his bad face.
And then cute little Anthony turns to everybody else.
And you mustn't think bad thoughts about me either, or I'll do the same thing to you. Play some more music.
It's good what you've done to Dan. It's real good.
It was swell. It was just swell. That was really good.
So everybody, all the adults in the room, fearfully comply.
I kind of liked it a little bit better when we had cities outside and we could get real television.
But how can you mean it? Why, Anthony's television is much better than anything we ever used to get.
Oh, yes, it's fine. Why, Anthony's television is the best television we've ever seen.
That's the chairman of the FCC.
So the thing reminds me so much of the fearfulness that's going around Washington, D.C. And maybe around the country as all of these cabinet members are required to praise him all the time. The people in the Congress acquiesce to him. This episode, I thought, this is what's going on. They're all so afraid of him. They just say, no, it's good what you're doing. It's real, real good. Mm-hmm. Real good. It's hysterical that they're going to be taken out into the cornfield.
Yeah, they're very afraid of him. Absolutely.
Bending the knee. The story of a monstrous, conscienceless kid with enormous powers and no restraints. Mm-hmm. Sounds pretty familiar, doesn't
right.
it? Moving over a little bit, you and I both took part in the No Kings Day.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't care if you're a big Trump supporter, or you like everything about his policies and that, but I would think it'd be really hard to find somebody, anybody in this country who would say, yeah, you know what? I'd really love if we had a king in this country. Told us everything that we should do and approved of every move that we make. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I want. Well, nobody would say that. And that's really what the No Kings Day was about, a reminder to people that this is a unique setup we have in this country. This democracy thing has been around for nearly 250 years, and it's never been threatened like it is.
But a lot of stupid people don't understand that that's what No Kings means. I can't, don't even get me started. You know I'm already in a mood today. Don't even get me started.
Yeah, you are in a mood. You.
I
you
am
are.
In a mood.
Well, I thought the No Kings sign, I thought it said no smoking. But boy, there were a lot of great signs that we saw. My daughter, she saw a woman, older woman, carrying a sign that said...
she said, you sent it to me. You just so people know, you and I were not at the same march. I don't want people to think we were together, for crying out loud. But your daughter, Kate, said... The sign was said, nothing more American than protesting tyranny, except she had
nothing
spelled...
Nothing more American than protesting tyranny. Yeah, I have it now. And then my daughter writes, but no, she wasn't an undercover MAGA person, and yet she misspelled tyranny as tranny.
Oh, dear.
So it then read, nothing more American than protesting trannies.
She just left the Y out.
And then when somebody pointed it out to her, the woman was screaming for anybody who had a Sharpie so she could fix her spelling.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe she was just referring to auto mechanics specializing in transmission repair.
Yeah,
I don't know, but that was one of the signs that stood out. Some of the other ones I kind of liked, make the guillotine great again. This guy wrote, there's so much to protest, I couldn't decide what to put on this sign. The GOP, protecting pedophiles since 2016. And then there was a guy dressed up as Uncle Sam, but he had a Trump head on him, so it read Uncle Scam, and he was walking
around. Oh, good. Oh, that's good.
America, rejecting tyrants since 1776. And then this one, Iran. From the Epstein files.
That's really clever. People are so clever. We had a huge showing in my little burb here, and it was astonishing how I figured, you know, there'd be a few out in this little bedroom neighborhood.
Yeah.
It was packed along the streets down. It was packed. People were honking. People were, as they were driving by, and it was moving to the point of, this was the first protest, political protest I'd ever been a part of. And yeah. I don't know what really, I guess I told somebody, I go, yeah, this is the first one. They go, the first, I go, yeah, I guess I finally have had enough. And I just need to, you know, get out here and at least show up. I don't know what it's going to do, but I can't not show up anymore. I just can't not show up anymore. I can't. So
I know a lot of people poo-poo it and say, it isn't going to do any good. That's not going to change any policies, or the Republicans aren't suddenly going to grow a spine and all of this stuff. But it feels good to be out there in this time of feeling so helpless about things, to actually be out there and doing something with like-minded people who, we're not all the same. There are Republicans and Democrats and Independents and Fabians and Tories and Whigs out there. But what we all have in common is that we don't want this country to become authoritarian. We don't want a king ruling in this country. That's what we thought we got rid of in 1776. And that's all the people are out there saying. You know.
And by the way, that's not true that protests don't make a difference.
Of course.
I have a whole list of protests that made a difference. The most notable, most impactful, the civil rights protests in 1963 directly led, pressured Congress to pass the Civil Rights Act in 64.
Yeah, and the other thing in the Vietnam War was another, arguably another example. But the commonality of all of them is that there wasn't just one big protest. The civil rights fight took years and years and decades.
Right. But that's what I mean, is that that is a culmination of everybody speaking out.
Yeah.
And if nobody said anything, they'd just continue merrily on their way. Same thing with women's right to vote. That required a lot of momentum from activists to get that finally passed.
You know, the Equal Rights Amendment was first proposed in the 1920s.
Yeah.
I think 1922, something like that.
Yep.
All these years later, it's not.
Yep.
It's more than 100 years in the in the proposing, and it still.
Yep, got to keep us women in our place.
And that place is the kitchen.
Are you gonna wait for inside your miracle? Stand up and fight.
Ain't that right, Mega?
A part of me, and I think it's part of every human, that when things are going the worst, and I guess I'm talking about when somebody dies, it is expected that everybody's got to hold their hat in their hand and be respectful and mournful, and certainly all of that is part of it. But it also unleashes a kind of dark humor. I remember my dad and I were at my great aunt's funeral. We always called her Auntie. She was lying in an open casket. And we're sitting there, and my dad is next to me. He hits me with his elbow, and he said, "Pat, I think I just saw Auntie move." So I was reading this. I was hearing about Conan O'Brien, and I don't know if you know what happened to him, but he lost both his parents 3 days apart from each other.
Yeah, so sad.
And he was in Austria. In December, well, December 2024. And then he got news while he was in Austria that he had lost his 95-year-old father. He had died. So O'Brien says, I got on another connecting flight, and I made it back to Boston. And he said, there was a moment I was outside of my family house. It's the house I grew up in Brookline. And I got this text from Will Arnett. Now, Will Arnett, if people don't know, is a comic actor. He has a podcast with Jason Bateman, and we've talked about that before. So Arnett sends his sympathies to Conan and said they were all thinking of him. And then Conan said, and I just wrote back and I said, I blame Bateman.
Yeah.
He says, whenever we're together, we always joke about Bateman. And so he essentially said, Jason Bateman killed my father. He said, which is insane. Only 3 days later, then, O'Brien's mother dies at the age of 92. He said, quote, in the same room that my father had passed in, which was really shocking. And I've laid out now that I do have space for comedy, even in that circumstance. Mm-hmm. So Will texts me again and said, if you want, I could have Bateman take care of your sister, too. And I immediately texted back, 3053 Beacon Street, apartment 17F. Make it look like a robbery. And the point is that that's just how comedians communicate. It eases the unrealness of occurrences like that that are otherwise so hard to get through. Humor just gets you through so much. When I got fired from my job, I just laughed. And when I went out to the parking lot and slashed all the tires on the general manager's car, I just laughed. Because laughter can get you through a lot.
That made me laugh too, so thank you for that.
Were you laughing at me? Were you laughing at me?
Hey, I got a random question for you. I was watching reading TV and looking through magazines, and I've looked at these fashion ads, and they often feature models, men and women. And my question is, why do models always look pissed off or mad?
Because they haven't.
Why can't they smile? They look far.
Would you like the answer?
Yeah.
Would you like the answer? Then be quiet.
Yes, master.
Because they haven't eaten anything in weeks. That's why they're mad.
Well, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
No, I'm joking, of course, because it's just an attitude that you have to have. That
why
you know,
though? Why I wouldn't you?
They're
be much
better
more
than us, Pat. They're better than us, and they have to
I'd
show
be way
it.
More receptive to somebody that was smiling. Everybody looks better when they smile. They do.
Not the people that are better than us.
Maybe they have crummy teeth. I don't know. Or half bitten off tongue, and they don't want to show anybody that. I don't have the answer to that. I just think it's like a industry rule. You have to look angry or sad or haughty or above everybody else.
Haughty.
Or angry.
Such a good word.
Haughty is a good word, isn't
it? Yes, H-A-U-G-H-T-Y, not the H-O-T-T-I-E.
Speaking of advertising, I always am amused by products that say, because, you know, a product can say, we're new and improved. But some people just, they can't make their products any better. But they want to say something to get you excited. And so I like products that ballyhoo, we've got a new look. Like our package has changed.
Yeah.
Won't make your life any better, but how about that? We've got a new look.
Well, you know, Cracker Barrel did that and that backfired. Everybody had a litter of kittens about that. They changed their whole new logo and everybody.
I remember that.
And then they went back to the old stupid old man sitting on a thing.
When people locate things like Cracker Barrel restaurants and other big time franchises, I would assume they send a crew into the town they're thinking about it, and they learn as much as they can about the people who live there, their likes, their dislikes, their habits, the kinds of food they favor, and all of that before they invest in putting a location in this given town. And the given town that I live near, Bend, Oregon, the Cracker Barrel restaurant lasted a little more than a year there. And it was a novelty at first, you know, all the cars lined up. And then pretty soon people are just saying, this isn't very good.
Yeah.
This isn't very good. I don't want to eat corn-fed gravy all the time. Or whatever it is.
I think it's more lard-fed gravy is what you're talking about there, Pat.
So we had to go in and give it a try.
Oh,
What a mistake. Oh, my God. Well, I had to know for sure.
And what did you order?
I can't remember. I just remember looking around at the other tables around me. And some of the people looked delighted when the food would come. And they go, oh, my. Oh, look at this. Oh, could I get more gravy for this?
When their mountain of food arrived. Well, yeah,
that's it. It's huge. Yeah. And I can't eat that much. Maybe that's part of it. But it just doesn't look good. And the whole presentation wasn't great. And I guess the rest of the city thought so, too, because they folded up their tent and left rather quickly.
Cracker Barrel serves, I've looked this up, predominantly older demographic. They tried to appeal to the younger, but it's pretty much just the grandpa core atmosphere they've got going on there with people 55 and older that are into nostalgia and loyalty and
salmonella.
There might be a certain way of thinking about, oh, I don't know, other people who might not look like them. There's just this sort of, I don't know, mannerisms
kind of a vibe.
Thank you. Yes, there's a vibe to the Cracker Barrel.
Here at the Cracker Barrel, pancakes are golden, fluffy, and now stuffed with creamy cheesecake. Ah! Enjoy a full pancake breakfast starting at $8.99. Cracker Barrel, take care now.
But they do have a new look, Lisa.
That's right.
This has nothing to do with anything. I was at the doctor the other day. I was sitting in the waiting room.
Oh, God. Don't get me started.
But they had a sign up there, you know, like X-ray department and I don't know.
Thought you almost said X-rated. I'm like, ding, what?
Well, they probably had that too.
X-ray department. Okay.
I did see a doctor come out in the nude. I wondered about that. So you might be onto something. Right. But they also had a door that said pain management department. And I swear this happened. As I'm sitting there, they call a woman's name. Kathy? And this woman gets up and walks to the door of the pain management department. And the nurse swings the door in such a way that it hits the woman pretty much right in the head.
Oh, my God. This did not happen in the pain management department.
And I think, so that's what irony means. It's true. And I'm the only one who noticed it. It's just weird.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain. The only thing that's real.
As you and I have both talked about, there is so much frustration with dealing with life every day, retail and getting people on the phone. And you can't just get people on the phone. You got to go through these bunch of recordings.
If you'd like to listen to on hold music, press 1. For reggae, press 2. If you'd like to jump up, jump down, and pick a bale of cotton, press 3.
Come on! Just give me somebody.
I know.
It takes forever to finally get to talk to anybody.
Yes.
Absolutely maddening.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy that you and I both know, but I won't use his real name.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. No, I don't know who you're talking okay. about.
He's an adult man like you and like you and me. But so sadly his brother died, his adult brother. Mm. And so he put this, I think our friend put it on Facebook. Let's call him Larry, because I call everybody Larry on this podcast.
I know. You do.
And he said, so I had to unwind my brother's affairs. And one of the things I had to do was try to cancel his Verizon cell phone account. And he says here, unedited and verbatim is the actual response I received.
Oh, my God.
And so he's on the phone with a live Verizon agent.
He said,
how do I cancel my deceased brother's account? And this is the Verizon agent. A meticulous review of our esteemed records confirms that Mr. Jim Jenkins' distinguished status, Jenkins, not the real name.
Yeah.
Mr. Jim Jenkins' distinguished status as the principal account holder is true. In adherence to our meticulously crafted policies designed to safeguard your interests, the graceful dissolution of this account necessitates a personal visit to one of our flagship Verizon retail establishments.
What?
During this essential visit, we kindly request the presentation of the official death certificate of the esteemed account holder. Our dedicated specialists will then, with utmost discretion, facilitate the cancellation process. This refined protocol is meticulously instituted to uphold the paramount security of the account, thereby precluding any unauthorized access or untoward activity, particularly during moments of such profound sensitivity.
Gee, that is just full of the warm and fuzzies, ain't it?
Is it just crap? God. What is going on with this world?
God. Well, that's clearly AI generated. That's not.
He believed it to be a live Verizon agent that he engaged.
They were reading from a script that.
Yeah. Well, undoubtedly. But I mean, what a stupid script.
I know.
Well, why do you have to read from a script? And why do you have to go through hoops to cancel? Just say, I would like to cancel the account. Done.
Right. Right.
They're implying that, well, somebody that doesn't have a guy's best interest might cancel his account.
Right.
Just as to be mean. And so we need to verify that this is the real guy.
Right.
But the bringing down to his death certificate thing?
Yeah.
Weird. Yeah. You want me to bring my birth certificate, too, while you're at it?
Yeah.
Craziness.
Yeah. I think
that's the theme of the show, Lisa, so far, is the world's crazy, except for you and me.
Exactly.
And our listeners.
And no wonder you and I are pissed off. Can anybody blame us? I don't think so.
I don't think so. I really don't think.
Yeah, I don't like scripted replies. There's a pharmacy I go into where apparently they have been told that they have to greet customers even if they're halfway across the store. They have to shout, "Hi, welcome in." And it's like, I know you've been told by management to do this. I don't really feel like engaging with you at this time if I have a question, perhaps. But the whole forced greeting, all of it, I guess, I'm tired of inauthenticity. Is that a word?
Yeah.
Inauthenticity? Yeah. Disingenuousness, yeah. Is that a word? I'm just tired of it.
It is now.
Be yourself. Don't do the scripted things. Don't help you maintain or create more customer relation, good feelings. No, it just feels performative and
forced
yeah. and yeah. stupid. Stupid.
Yeah. You stupid, stupid, stupid.
You're stupid all the time.
You know what we need right now, Lisa?
Silly. I do know what we need. Play that tequila song and let's open up the bottle.
You're stupid.
Well, we'll do that at the end of the...
Okay.
Stupid, stupid.
Dang it. I was hoping we could do that right now.
You're stupid all the time.
You know, it's looking like stupid is a disease. And it is terribly contagious.
You don't quit acting stupid. You're gonna mess up your worried mind.
And I don't know if I have the disease myself currently, but I am almost certainly a carrier. My folks had a bunch of old records. I don't know if you're familiar, but there were different speeds of records.
Yeah.
The 45s that we played when we were kids and stuff. But before that, there was a 78 RPM. That thing just went around really fast.
Yeah.
And they're very fragile. There was a record label called the OK, O-K-E-Y. They put all kinds of weird novelty records out. And this is one I thought might cheer you up. It's called the OK Laughing Record. Now, mind you, this thing's recorded around 1920. Came out of Germany. A woman named Lucy Bernardo and Otto Rathke. And I won't play the whole thing because it'll drive you crazy. But there's a guy playing a lone trumpet, a coronet here. He's trying to play, and they just start laughing. It makes no sense, but here's a part of it.
Okay.
This thing is like 3.5 minutes long. Who could listen to that whole thing for 3.5 minutes?
I love
it. But it was hugely popular, I am told, and I read. They sold over 1 million copies. People dug it. They loved it back in the 1920s, apparently.
There's something very, very hard to resist people laughing. That's why, you know, when you're playing to a bigger crowd, that's better because if somebody laughs, then everybody laughs. It's hard to play to a group of three people, but laughter is really, it's so infectious. I know that's not anything new, but I need to listen to that today while I'm drinking my bottle of tequila. That is what I will do. That will make me feel better.
You will be happy to know that record, of course, with anything successful, there's always a sequel. So that was followed by the second laughing record. This time they're laughing at a guy who's trying to sing. And then they did one called the dancing record.
Mm.
I wasn't able to locate that masterpiece. And then, finally, the OK crying record. Here's some of that. You just can't get enough of
that. They could have hired me for that one.
I love novelty stuff like that.
I do, too.
There was one by, you remember the actor Jim Backus?
Yes.
He was on Gilligan's Island. He also was the voice of Mr. Magoo.
Yeah.
Right, George. I ain't telling you. Well, he is the guy in this record called Delicious. And the woman who's taking part is never identified. But this is just a stupid record of the same kind as the OK Laughing record. It's called Delicious.
We're going to have fun.
Yes.
It's a cozy table, isn't it?
And champagne, my dear.
Delicious.
And then a guy named Stan Freberg did a song called John and Marcia, and he's doing both the male and the female voice here. And again, it's just silly. But its silliness is kind of infectious.
John! Marcia.
So there you go.
I am a huge fan of novelty records.
John! Marcia.
And those are the only two words spoken in the entire record. John, Marcia.
John? Marcia.
I think they're very clever. They're fun.
John!
And who does them anymore?
Marcia.
And they should have had their own category. John. There should be Grammy Awards, Marcia, for those. I don't know
They did have a Grammy Award for comedy, but not specifically for novelty.
No, that's stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
So
I'm with you on that. Yeah. That's the way it should be.
Yeah.
And by cracky, when I become
tyrant.
How are you spelling that? All right, let's do this joke. It's got a little bit of a local flavor, too, if you're a Seattle resident, because one of its citizens is the star of the joke.
Oh.
Bill Gates died in a car accident. He found himself in purgatory, and he was being sized up by God. Well, Bill, I'm going to let you decide where you want to go. Bill Gates says,
Oh, thanks, God. What's the difference between the two?
Well, I'm willing to let you visit both places briefly to help you make a decision.
So Bill said, okay, let's try hell first.
So Bill went to hell. It was a beautiful, clean, sandy beach. It had clear waters. There were thousands of gorgeous women running around, playing in the water, laughing and frolicking. The sun was shining. Temperature was perfect. And Bill Gates says,
this is great, God. Gee, if this is hell, I really want to see heaven.
God said, all right, fine. And off they went. Heaven was a high place up in the clouds with angels drifting around, playing harps and singing. Mm. It was nice, certainly it was pleasant, but not as enticing as hell.
Sure.
So Bill thought for a moment. He said,
you know what, God? I think I prefer hell.
God said, fine, as you desire. And so Bill Gates went to hell. Well, 2 weeks later, Lisa, God decided to check up on him. And when God arrives in hell,
he found
Bill shackled to a wall.
What?
Screaming amongst the hot flames in a dark cave. He was being burned and tortured by demons. God said, how's everything going, Bill? And Bill responded, his voice full of anguish and disappointment. He said,
what do you mean, how am I doing, God? This is awful. This is not what I expected. I can't believe this happened. What happened to that other place with the beaches and the beautiful women playing in the water?
And God said, oh, that was the screensaver.
John? John. Marcia. Oh, John. Marcia. John, Marcia. Marcia.
John. Marcia.
John.
Marcia. Oh, Marcia, Marcia.
John, John. Marcia, Marcia, Marcia. John, John, John. Marcia, 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 Marcia. John, 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 John.
Marcia.
John.
Marcia.
tequila.
For listening to Peculiar Podcast.
Hey, goodbyes.
Join Pat and Lisa online at peculiarpodcast.com.
The gift that keeps on giving the whole year.
And on the Peculiar Podcast Facebook fan page.
Sweet.
On Twitter at Peculiar Podcast, at Mr. Pat Cashman, and at Foster Chick.
Join us and live in peace, or pursue your present course and face obliteration.